Blog Talk Radio.
Hi guys, Richard Diaz here. Got a great show for you today. Got Dr. John Ivey on with me. He's going to talk to us about nutrient timing and the value of beet juice. And before we get started, I just want to remind all my Blog Talk Radio fans that we are going to be moving our show soon, and to continue to get access to our many episodes, I highly recommend that you subscribe to us at naturalrunningnetwork.com. One more time, naturalrunningnetwork.com. And on the homepage, be sure to subscribe by clicking on the inbox. It's not the same as subscribing to iTunes or through your Android device or what have you. It is getting on to our private A-list. Being on the A-list gets you access to all kinds of really, really cool information, training programs, etc. And I really want to keep you with me, so be sure to get that done very soon. Thanks a lot, and I hope you enjoy this broadcast. Welcome to the Natural Running Network. We are brought to you by Mio, makers of the world's first strapless heart rate monitor sports watches, and MedHab, makers of RPM Squared, an innovative system of gait analysis that slips right into your running shoes. My name is Richard Diaz. I am your host. Are you a runner? Do you love to get out and challenge yourself? Running your first marathon, or maybe caught the bug of obstacle racing? Well, sit tight, because this is a show you just don't want to miss. I am with Dr. John Ivey. He is Professor Emeritus from the Department of Kinesiology and Health Education at the University of Texas. And I'm very pleased to finally get him on the show. Say hello to our audience, John.
Yeah, hi, Richard. Hi, audience. It's really a pleasure to be on. I'm looking forward to the interview.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's as I suggested to you, I've been very excited about having a chance to get you on the show. As I had mentioned to you in previous communications, I have done a few interviews with Dr. Portman, and I know that you guys got together on this book, Hardwired for Fitness. First of all, I think that was a fascinating read.
Thank you.
So it dovetails very nicely into the things that I want to talk about with you. Predominantly what I'm interested in is learning more about this fascinating new supplement being the Beet Elite that you guys are manufacturing and producing.
Yes, Beet Elite is produced by a company called Neogenis, who I consult for here in Austin, Texas. And it's a unique product in that it's made from beet crystals, and it's an all-natural product, and it boosts nitric oxide levels in the body. And, of course, boosting nitric oxide has big benefits from the standpoint of exercise performance and also health, many health benefits. But the unique thing about Beet Elite is that a packet contains about 10 grams of this beet crystal, but the way the beet crystals are formed and all, they work much faster than just taking in normal products that have high amounts of nitrate, such as what Beet Elite does. So if you're consuming beet juice or many of the other products that are on the market, it takes 2.5 hours to 3 hours to actually have some benefit to improving performance, whereas if you take Beet Elite, it works within 30 minutes. So you can take this about 20 to 30 minutes prior to exercise and then get the benefits of elevated nitric oxide during your workouts or competition.
I have a lot of friends that are actually, I want to say, addicted to the product, and they're really after it. As a matter of fact, I'll share with you that, as I might have mentioned to you before, that I've been coaching Hunter McIntyre.
Right.
And Hunter shows up to see me the other day, and he busts out a pack of this Beet Elite and just pours it down his neck dry and chases it down with a bottle of water, which just scared me to death. Because the first few times that I tried the product, it took me back a little bit. I was like, ah man, this is kind of nasty. But now I've found that it's really not that bad. I mean, I think it has a lot to do with the way you set yourself up for it. Like I've tried it this morning, and I've been trying to push myself into a regimen to just kind of get a better sense of, you know, what it can do for me, because I need all the help I can get, incidentally.
Yeah, well, don't we all?
Yeah, but I just noticed that, like, if I put it in a water bottle and put in about, I don't know, two ounces of water and just shook it up real aggressively and drank it, it almost tastes really good.
Yeah, well, it's actually designed for about 4 to 6 ounces of fluid, and you want to then take it as fast as possible. You want to take it as a shot. But it also, you know, I don't know if Hunter told you, but it comes in two flavors. So you have the regular beet flavor, and then it comes in a black cherry flavor. And we found that many athletes like the black flavor flavor better than the beet flavor. Personally, I like the black cherry better as well. And so you do have some options there, but you might want to try mixing it with 4 to 6 ounces rather than just 2 ounces and taking it. And Hunter is unusual in the fact that he just takes it in like a bag of Kool-Aid or something and chases it with.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it.
But you can, yeah, I mean, as long as you get it in, you know, as a shot, basically, it works quite well. We have, you know, many NFL, NBA, HL, National Hockey League teams taking the products. So we have Division I college football teams taking it, Ohio State, Alabama, Auburn, and so forth. So, you know, the product is, you know, out there, and many, many really fine athletes are taking the product.
I was introduced to the product first, I want to say, almost 2 years ago. I did an interview with Gilbert Tuobunye.
Do you
know Gilbert?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know who he is.
Yeah, anyway, the person that represents him, Allison, her last name escapes me now, but she introduced me to it and sent me this book, which I have sitting here on my desk. It's called Beat the Odds, Harness the Power of Beets to Radically Transform Your Health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was fascinated by the history of the value of basically red vegetables. You know, historically how they were regarded as being so powerful as an antioxidant and a benefit, you know, to the body.
That's right. Yeah, in those vegetables, you not only do you have high amounts of nitrate, which are converted into nitric oxide in the body, but you have, you know, many flavonoids and polyphenols and so forth that have many other health benefits as well, and protect the or activate the immune system, also act as antioxidants and so forth. And so the red vegetables are quite beneficial.
So the idea being is that in this concentrated form, I read that it's like by taking a shot of this beetle-eat, it's like getting 6 beets. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, our equivalent of about 800 to 1,000 milliliters of beet juice.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, I know. It's very concentrated beet powder, and like I said, it works really quite well. We haven't published it yet, but we have some just astounding data coming out on the metabolic effects that it has during cycling and cycling time trials and so forth, and also some work on recovery after high sets of resistance exercise.
I'd be really curious to see that.
Yeah, okay.
So
we hope to get that out sometime soon.
Aside from the nitric oxide benefits, I read here that there's also some natural occurring tryptophan in the product.
Yeah, there is some in it, but I don't know, honestly, you know, if there's enough to have, you know, any major effect or not. The major benefits of beet elite is the nitrate and the boosting of nitric oxide. But again, within beets you have a number of other ingredients that are going to have, you know, health benefits, you know, the betalains, the other flavonoids and so forth that are going to be beneficial, as well as some amino acids.
Taking someone that maybe is not athletic but is interested in improving their health and potentially even trying to encourage detoxification. Let's cut to the chase. A guy that drinks too often and is feeling like, yeah, I need to put a little something back. Is there any value in using the beet product in order to offer some benefit to the liver and kidneys and things like this?
Yeah, there are, you know, again, this is not, now that's not necessarily due to the nitric oxide producing effects of the beet elite, but there are other ingredients within the beets that help with detoxification, like betalains and benin and so forth, that have detoxifying capabilities for the liver and actually are good for liver health. So, yeah, somebody that's been drinking too often and too much, you know, and they need some detoxifying, getting on something like beet elite could actually be beneficial. It's not going to work overnight, so you'd have to be on it for several days, but it does have a detoxifying effect.
What would be a dosage? I mean, I couldn't find anywhere what would be a recommended dosage other than saying that, you know, 30 minutes before a workout would be the time to take it. So if you were trying to detox a little bit, would it be harmful to take the product a couple times a day?
No, actually it wouldn't. I mean, if I was going to do something like this and do it over time, I think that somebody who wanted to detox should try and do some working out as well,
yeah,
as take this. But, you know, taking it before a workout and then maybe taking it later on in the afternoon or at night, you know, two packs a day is safe. There's no problem with doing that. And in fact, we have with some very competitive athletes who are doing long endurance type work, triathlons or the Olympic linked triathlons and so forth, even which are a little shorter than, say, you know, the very long ones, such as Ironman. But what we do is we suggest that they take a pack of Beet Elite about 2 hours prior to, and then about 30 minutes prior to. So, you know, this is, you know, this is completely safe to do that. And this may have some beneficial effect on detoxifying if they were to take it in the morning and at night, you know, at least for a week or two.
Okay. So I want to talk about this nutrient timing, because I think that that's essentially what we're talking about on a broader stroke. So you had co-authored this book with Dr. Portman, Hardwired for Fitness, and it's essentially how, when, why we should be taking on calories. Because there's a lot of fascination with, as you, I'm sure you're fully aware, with nutrition in regard to performance. And there's so much that's been done lately where, you know, athletes are trying to play with this fat adaptive approach to eating, where they're cutting their carbs out, and a lot of foolishness, quite frankly, in my mind, where they're messing with their diets. And when I first read this book and it started talking about the importance of the timing in which we take on calories and how much more important that is relative to the type of things that we actually consume, I think it's worth talking about, and I can't imagine anybody better to talk about it with than you. So can you kind of shed some light on this whole nutrient timing thing?
Yeah, well, Robert Portman and I actually wrote two books. One was called Nutrient Timing, and then the follow-up was Hardwired for Fitness. And basically, essence of nutrient timing is taking in the appropriate nutrients at the time where they're most most effectively used. And they're, from an athletic standpoint, they're three basic phases of nutrient timing. You have the energy phase, which is before exercise and during exercise. And so what nutrients do you want to take in during that time, and how you time that nutrient intake depending on the type of exercise to get the most out of those nutrients. And then immediately post-exercise, you want to take in certain nutrients that stimulate the anabolic metabolism of the body. So during that particular time, you want to be stimulating tissue repair, you want to be stimulating tissue development, you want to be replenishing the fuel stores within the muscles and within the body, such as liver glycogen and so forth. That's an extremely important phase, because what happens there really dictates what happens over the next 24 hours before the next workout. So then after the anabolic phase, you have what I call the adaptation phase. And so this is the anabolic phase represents post-exercise for and up to about 2 hours post-exercise. And then after that is the adaptation phase. And again, if you take in the appropriate nutrients at the right times, you can continue to have a high rate of anabolic metabolism. And so you can continue to increase energy stores, tissue repair, and tissue growth. And when you talk about training adaptation, you know, we're training to bring about a training adaptation. If you're doing resistance training, you're trying to increase muscle mass and strength. If you're doing aerobic training, you're trying to increase cardiovascular endurance and muscle endurance. And for muscle endurance, you want to increase mitochondria. For cardiovascular endurance, you want to increase blood volume and red blood cell mass. For strength training, resistance exercise, you want to increase muscle mass. This is protein synthesis. This is anabolic metabolism. So if you can stimulate protein synthesis faster post-exercise, you stimulate a faster training adaptation. And so taking in the appropriate nutrients at the right time can do that. And so we find that training adaptation is enhanced. And then you can keep that process going, protein synthesis and tissue repair and so forth, if you do the appropriate, take in appropriate nutrients at the right time during the adaptation phase as well.
In essence, what I gathered from this is it's all tied to the circadian rhythm, right? So the times of the day where the body's most receptive to carbohydrate versus protein, is that pretty much it?
Well, that's part of it. So there's two phases. So you have the exercise part of it, where what you want to do around the exercise. But then you have the general overall circadian rhythm and daily nutrient intake that you need and what you need to do at those times. So if you look at what the body's like when we first get up in the morning, it's completely different than what it's like, say, at supper time, you know, from a standpoint of the hormones and energy level and so forth. And so at particular times, you want to have certain macronutrients in the diet. So in the morning when you wake up, you have high cortisol levels, insulin levels are low, blood glucose levels are low. You're in a fasted state. This is more of a catabolic state. So the hormone levels are set up to break down tissue in the body to produce gluconeogenic precursors that are amino acids, lactate, and so forth, that go to the liver to convert into glucose so that you maintain blood glucose levels because you haven't eaten in, 12 hours or so. So what you want to do in the morning, what the body really needs is carbohydrate, because you want to get the carbohydrate in. This will lower the cortisol levels, it'll raise insulin levels, it'll raise blood glucose levels, and convert the body from this catabolic state that we're in during the night into a more anabolic state. So breakfast in the morning is extremely important, because if you don't eat breakfast, you stay in this catabolic state until you do eat some nutrients. So you have tissue breakdown going on to support blood glucose levels, until you take nutrients in. And the nutrients that you want to take in is a high amount of carbohydrate in the morning, again, to get blood glucose back up, to refill the liver with glycogen, of, you know, the form in which glucose is stored in the liver. And you want to get cortisol levels down. By the way, if you don't eat breakfast in the morning, you have a much greater chance of being obese, for example, than you do if you eat regular breakfasts. And a lot of people think, well, I don't eat breakfast, so I've reduced my calories. But it's one of the worst things they can do if they want to control their body weight, because elevated cortisol levels for long periods of time, day after day, cause fat development around the abdominal area. So you get abdominal obesity. And you also alter your metabolic rate, you know, resting metabolic rate, which declines. So eating breakfast is extremely important, and you want that to be a high carbohydrate type meal. It was some protein and obviously some fat, but mainly carbohydrate. So the breakfast should be 60-65% carbohydrate, we believe. Then when you go to lunch, what you have is, you know, you're in the day, you're physically active during this period of time, and there again, you know, carbohydrate is a major fuel source, so you still want to have a sufficient amount of carbohydrate. So maybe 55-60% of the diet at lunchtime should be carbohydrate, maybe about 20% protein and 30% fat. At supper time, things start changing, though. One of the things that happens in the early evening, for whatever reason we don't know, but appetite goes up, and people tend to overeat. One of the reasons that people are obese is because the additional calories they eat actually after supper. So between supper and going to bed, people do an awful lot of snacking and take in additional calories that they don't need. So what you want supper to be is something that's very satiating, something that's going to satisfy you for a long period of time and keep appetite down. And what does that is a high protein fat type of meal. So here, you don't need much carbohydrate at this time. You're not worried about, you know, being overly physically active during this time and needing a lot of carbohydrate. But what you do need at this time is a high amount of protein and fat. So that should be those should be elevated in the diet, less carbohydrate. And this is more satiating. This will prevent you from being hungry from time in the morning from supper time till going to bed. The other thing that is important is that by getting in a high amount of protein at supper time, you take advantage of the late evening hours in which growth hormone starts to elevate. And this is a growing period or a repair period for the body. So during this period of time, you have a lot of tissue repair and growth that naturally goes on. And by having a high amount of protein in the diet, you provide the amino acids for this to occur. Something else that you can do is, particularly if you're an athlete and you're trying to maintain body mass and strength, or muscle mass and strength, you want to limit the amount of muscle tissue breakdown during the night. And we know now that if you take a high protein supplement right before going to bed, so it doesn't have to be all protein, it can be, you know, 80% protein, 20% carbohydrate, something like that. Something, a Greek yogurt would be a good example, or some turkey breast and a little milk. But going to about 30 minutes before going to bed, we know that what this does is prevent the body from going into a large catabolic state during the late hours or early morning hours. And it actually, you stimulate a positive nitrogen balance in the body. You stimulate a muscle protein synthesis during sleep rather than protein breakdown. And this has beneficial effects on maintaining muscle mass and strength for the athlete. So you know, what we eat and when we eat it become very important. And for everyone, whether it's athlete or just the general public, they really need three good meals a day. They can't skip breakfast, even if it's just something small and quick. You've got to break that fast and you got to get cortisol levels down. And so high carbohydrates in the morning, high carbohydrate for lunch, or at least moderate carbohydrate, then low carbohydrate, high protein, fat at supper time.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the mistakes people made and or make, and you've already touched on one of them, being that there's a lot of people that are under the impression that in order to encourage fat metabolism, they want to get their workout in before they take in any food in the morning. And I've seen, you know, I work with a lot of housewives too, that their MO is they get to bed late, they wake up early, they go to the gym, they get their workout, then they really restrict their carbohydrate intake because they think carbs make them fat. And then they get into the midday before they actually have a meal of any value, and they get into this whole spiraling effect of lethargy. They get headachy, they get cranky, and you know I do resting metabolic assessments here, and you know aside from VO2 testing, but I find that they're when I do a resting metabolic assessment on them, their bodies are just in havoc. It seems like their metabolism's really jacked up. And the first thing that happens when we start changing their timing and nutrient intake and causing them to take carbs in the morning, that it changes their metabolism. That seems to be like number one kind of a problem that I see commonly. But what I want to talk about, what I think is fascinating, get your opinion on, is these guys that are so vicious about taking in all this protein through the course of the day, pre-workout, post-workout, and essentially trying to stave away from carbohydrate. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's a real mistake. Two things. One is that, you know, the quality of workout is very, very important. And when people go into the workout and they're go in fasted, they have a much harder time getting through the workout than if they've had some carbohydrate that can support the workout and make it mentally and physically easier. They're going to get more out of the workout. The other is that all these studies, programs out there for athletes where they go in and they try to exercise in a fasted state and improve their fat burning capability and so forth, and they think that that's going to improve performance. There has not been one study that shows performance is improved under this type of training. And in fact, most studies show that it hurts performance. And there was even one study where they showed a couple of studies that have shown that when individuals train their body to utilize fat, more efficiently, what happens is they lose the ability to utilize carbohydrates efficiently, and therefore they can't work at high intensities of exercise because you can't burn fat fast enough at very high intensities of exercise to maintain the energy required for that exercise. So you have to be burning carbohydrates, and when you limit the ability to burn carbohydrates, then you limit the ability to work at high intensities of exercise. So I think it's a real mistake, and it's much harder to train under those conditions. So if it's not improving performance, why bother to do it? That's from an athletic standpoint. I forgot what the next question was. I'm sorry. Well, I just had to get that in.
I'm so glad you did, because that's been a bone of contention for me. And I've actually spoke with a bunch of these athletes that have seen where, and I'm sure you're familiar with this FASTER study that was conducted. And these guys are banging this drum about becoming fat adapted by doing all this craziness where they're restricting their carbohydrate intake and doing really aggressive long-term exercises to try to force their body to shift to fat metabolism. But as you suggested, it's clearly a problem in an aspect of performance. I mean, if you get over your lactate threshold, you're going to be looking for sugar and there's not going to be anybody home.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. And it's not, you know, and actually what was really interesting about a couple of studies that came out of Australia is that individuals had their muscle glycogen stores were reduced in the muscle, but there was some there. But even when they took them to high-intensity exercise or tried to take them to high-intensity exercise, they were incapable of breaking down that glycogen and using it as a fuel store. And so they couldn't exercise at high intensity exercise. So, you know, I just don't understand where all this is coming from, you know, because there is no data to support an improvement in performance with this type of training and diet. And there, I can cite 8 or 9 studies out of Australia where a lot of this work has been done by John Holly, and John will even say, you know, hey, look, there's no beneficial effect from a performance standpoint.
I think there's been a lot of it going on with ultramarathoners, and you know how that works is that, you know, you look at most ultramarathoners, even the ones that are competitive, they're rolling along at about a 10-minute mile, and they've become pretty efficient at, you know, chumming along and accessing their fat stores at that rate of speed. And so that's one thing that might lend people to believe that there's, you know, this holy grail. But, you know, and I'm referring to obstacle racing, where an example being that guys that are trying to compete in a beast event, where it's a 13-mile event with a lot of high-intensity efforts over terrain, high altitudes, undulating, you know, hill climbing and all these obstacles tossed into the fray, they got to go off hard and stay hard for the entire length of that event. And I just don't understand how anybody could possibly think that by restricting carbohydrate intake, they're going to put themselves in a beneficial position.
No, they actually won't. And I don't think that is beneficial at all to even think about training that way. You know, and it's all right. You can do some mixing. You know, it's all right to get up in the morning and if you want to work out, you know, in a fasted state and try to increase fat burning and so forth, that's fine. But post-exercise, you still want to get in carbohydrate, protein, and stimulate that anabolic phase for training adaptation. And then also maybe work out later on and get a quality workout in if you're doing 2-a-days with carbohydrate supplementation. So, you know, a combination may not be bad, but surely just going low carb all the time and training in a fasted state is not going to be beneficial. One, you're not going to be able to train as intensely, and two, you're going to lose your ability to work at high intensities of exercise.
Well, I think a lot of it's got to do with the fact that people have this opinion that by restricting their carbohydrate intake, that they're causing their body just typically to access fat stores, and that's why they seem to be leaner for having done it.
Right.
And what they don't realize is that really at the end of the day, when you move that carbohydrate out of your body, you're moving a lot of water out, and that water weight loss can cause you to look a little dehydrated, a little sucked up, and you know, that is appealing for a lot of people to say, well, I can see my abs when I do this, or I feel puffy when I have bread. I don't think there's anything wrong with having some hydration that surrounds these muscles, do you?
Oh, no, not at all. I think one of the things that happens, too, is that by cutting out carbohydrates, what these individuals actually do also is cut a lot of calories. So you see drops in body fat and so forth, but it's not necessarily to burning more fat. I think, obviously, you are relying possibly more on fat, but the other thing that you're doing is reducing the number of calories you're taking in per day. You think about, you know, individuals that cut out all the carbohydrate to get sufficient calories, and, you know, can be hard to do, and plus it cuts out an awful lot of snacking that athletes tend to do.
The short story is that early to bed, early to rise, get your carbs in, keep the carbs in while you're working out through the course of the day, start throwing protein back in the evenings when your body is in a better position to become more anabolic, and start to repair some of the damage you caused through the course of the day, and to also keep you from being catabolic through their sleep time, right?
Right. That is exactly right. And one other thing, I think post-exercise is critically important that you get protein, carbohydrate in at that particular time, because that will really stimulate and take off the anabolics, kick off the anabolic phase, and then you can keep that going by timing your meals appropriately. So, for example, if I get up in the morning, I'm going to work out in the morning, I have a light breakfast to break the fast. Maybe 35 minutes or hour later, I do my workout. Immediately post-exercise, I want a carb protein supplement. And then maybe a couple of hours after that, I'm going to have lunch. And then a couple of hours after that, I'll snack. And then a couple of hours after that, I'll have supper. And then before going to bed, I'll have a high-protein snack. So the timing of those meals around the workout become important. So I can work out in the afternoon. I get up in the morning. I have a nice breakfast. I have a good lunch. I maybe have a light snack before the workout. And then I have my workout post-exercise. I have my carb protein supplement. And then maybe 2 hours after that, I have dinner. And then before going to bed, I have a snack. So I can have a continued increase in nutrient intake by supplementing and around my workout, and then having my working that in with my basic three meals a day.
So now I know you guys had a lot of the elite pros come into the lab and done some metabolic testing on them. Did you experiment with them in respect to cause and effect of them taking on the Beat Elite product relative to workouts and things like that?
Well, we haven't done it with the major athletes that have come in. What we've done is, you know, get trained cyclists and triathletes, guys doing resistance exercise, and we've looked at the effects of Beat Elite relative to that. And so recently we've been doing a study looking at, we haven't completed it yet, but we've been looking at doing high resistance exercise using a BioDex or isokinetic dynamometer and taking them through a hard workout doing leg extension. And so we fatigue these guys, and then we look at the rate of increase in strength in the leg, or the recovery of strength in the leg and force development. And what we find is that we get a faster rate of recovery when the individual's on the Beat Elite. And then with some cycling work actually done by Craig Broder, who's an exercise physiologist up in Chicago, but he's working in collaboration with my lab, and he's been showing some really dramatic effects taking Beat Elite prior to doing high intensity interval work on cycling. And so these individuals will do a high intensity cycling for a minute, and then they'll do low intensity for 3 minutes, and then so forth. And they have to do so many intervals. And what we find is that when the individual is on Beat Elite, they're able to maintain the workload throughout, say, 10 intervals, versus when they're not on the Beat Elite, they can only get to 7. We also see many metabolic changes that occur. So and physiological changes. So heart rate goes up without the Beat Elite. It stays level when you're on the Beat Elite. Pedal frequency declines when you're not on the Beat Elite, where pedal frequency is maintained when you're on the Beat Elite. There's differences in rates of breathing. There's and then blood flow through the muscle is better on Beat Elite than it is when they're not on Beat Elite. There's better oxygenation of the tissue. So there's just a number of metabolic effects that help to bring about a much greater ability to exercise at high intensity exercise when on the Beat Elite.
Wow. Now, I know that this stuff's packaged up. At least what I've gotten is in a box. You got a dose in a little packet, and you dump that in the water and shake it up and drink it down. Now, there's nothing that speaks of dose relative to mass. I mean, me being a bigger guy, would it be better for me to take 2? Is there any issue would leave me wanting if I don't take enough?
No, not really. We have sufficient amounts of nitrate, and plus the way it's made, you're not going to have more than somebody that's weighs 125 pounds. So if you weigh 300, a pack is still going to be good. What happens is that you take the nitrate in, and the nitrate is converted into nitrite, and then nitrite into nitric oxide. But that process doesn't occur readily. What you do is you have it will occur right away, I should say. But what happens is that you reach an equilibrium of nitrate to nitrite to nitric oxide. So that reaches sort of equilibrium in the body. So nitric oxide levels go up a little bit. But when you start exercising, then it shifts everything so that you generate more nitric oxide. And that's because of changes in the reduced hemoglobin in the body and also the acidity of the body. So in areas where you have more reduced hemoglobin, which is hemoglobin without oxygen attached to it, and where where the tissue is more acidic, that reaction occurs much faster and goes in the direction of generating nitric oxide. And that's what's so good about this system, is that it converts nitrate into nitric oxide where it's needed and at a rate that is commensurate with the intensity of the exercise. So, you don't need a whole very high levels of nitrate for this to occur. But our system's set up so that reaction occurs very, very effectively. The other thing is that there's another way of generating nitric oxide in the body, and that's through the nitric oxide synthase system. And nitric oxide synthase is an enzyme that's found in endothelial walls, or the endothelial cells that line the walls of the arteries. And so when blood pressure rises and there's an increased shear stress against the endothelial walls, such as during exercise, you get an increase in nitric oxide synthesis because you activate the nitric oxide synthase. And the way that process works is you got arginine that's converted into L-citrulline and nitric oxide. And this is good for low-intensity exercise and all, except this process requires oxygen. And so when oxygen tension goes down, or when we have a lot of reduced hemoglobin and not oxygenated hemoglobin, this system is not very effective. But what does become effective is the nitrate to nitric oxide production, which that's how B-Delete works, is through converting nitrate to nitrite to nitric oxide. So this becomes the most effective way of improving blood flow and oxygen and nutrient delivery to the muscles, and also the removal of metabolic byproducts, is by raising the nitrate levels, because in high-intensity exercise, the nitric oxide synthase system is not very effective because of the lack of oxygen that's required for that process to occur. The other thing is there's a lot of products on the market that add arginine to their products and say they're nitric oxide boosters, but this actually doesn't work. One of the main reasons is that your body's not deficient of arginine. You have more than 10 times the amount of arginine normally in the blood than required to saturate the nitric oxide synthase system. So just adding more doesn't make any difference. It's like having a bucket full of water and trying to add more water to it. It just doesn't work. And so those types of products are not very effective in generating nitric oxide, particularly during exercise. So again, you need oxygen for that system, and during high-intensity exercise like resistance exercise training or sprinting or, during high-intensity interval work and so forth, it's not a very effective. You have reduced oxygen in the blood, and so it's at the tissue that needs the nitric oxide is not a very effective system for generating it.
Right. I have a workout that I created, and I refer to it as training the dark side. And I actually created this workout for these obstacle racers because for the past, 15 years or so, I've been writing program for endurance athletes, predominantly triathletes and marathon runners. And, you know, they're always doing things to try to improve their endurance and their ability to sustain work over great lengths of time, which means they've got to be oxidative. But the high-intensity workouts that these obstacle racers are taking on require their ability to support work above their lactate threshold. So I call training the dark side the work you do above threshold. And
right.
What I have them doing is these high-intensity, short-duration intervals where, for example, I actually have a video I should share with you one day where I have Hunter doing these thrusters, you know, an exercise where he's doing like a squat to an overhead press with dumbbells. And he does that for 30 seconds. Then I have him run up a steep, craggy hillside. So it's technically challenging, but it's short. It's got to go up hard, fast, 30 seconds, jog down, and I require that he lets his heart rate come all the way back down to 120 beats per minute before he produces another interval. And so the governor in all of this is the recovery heart rate, but exposing him to this high rate of lactic acid production and giving his body a chance to find a way to shuttle it out of the muscles and, you know, do its thing, whether you respirate it out or convert it back to energy. But get accustomed to solving the problem as opposed to just being taken out by this ensuing lactic acid production. And so what he, as a matter of fact, it's almost perfect. The other day he came to see me and we were getting ready to do this workout, which incidentally is only about a 45-minute workout. But he throws down this Beet Elite and washes it down with water, and we proceed to do this work. You know, lo and behold, here he is the following week. He wins a race in New York.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I tell you, it parallels what Craig Broder's data is showing with high-intensity cycling, you know, cycling intervals and all, and that these guys, they're on the Beet Elite, they can work more efficiently, they can work longer, they don't tire, and they're working at, about 20% above their lactate threshold on these intervals, and the data is just astounding. I wish I could share with you all the information that Craig has with this, but it's just the difference between night and day being on the Beet Elite and not being on the Beet Elite with these guys. It's just incredible. In fact, the first time I saw the data, I was just blown away by it. And we're setting up to do some more of this testing in Austin in September, we hope, and continue on with looking at some of the other metabolic effects that it's having and physiological effects that are improving performance so dramatically.
Yeah, well, it never occurred to me there was a value in putting the two together because, you know, every time I turn around, somebody's showing up with a new supplement that they want to share with me or a new fangled technique that they ran into or this new device that they're playing with. And so I always like very, very reluctantly look at these things. But I started messing around with this Beet Elite, and I'm taking it right now. I had Yancey Culp sent me some of it, and I'm playing with it because – you know, as I suggested earlier, I need every edge I can get because I'm getting old and it's getting tougher and tougher and tougher, you know.
Wait till you get to my age, then.
Well, I think
by the way, let me tell you, people that are above the age of 45 have, and if they've had a sedentary lifestyle, they are only capable of generating 50% of the nitric oxide they could generate when they were at age 20. So they've lost 50% of their nitric oxide capabilities, and this has dramatic effects not only in exercise performance all, but in health. Nitric oxide controls just about every function in the body. I mean, we can talk about cognition, interaction of nerves, brain cells, communication. We can the development of bone mass, controlling the breakdown of bone as well as the formation of bone. We can talk about controlling glucose uptake in the muscle tissue and its relationship to type 2 diabetes. We can talk about tissue repair and regeneration. We can talk about the effects of nitric oxide in the immune system and how it helps to destroy bacteria. I mean, we can go on and on and on about the benefits of nitric oxide and its relationship to health. Hypertension, I mean, we haven't even talked, that's in the cardiovascular system. I mean, nitric oxide causes vasodilation, so the arteries and arterioles, it controls blood pressure. You can take somebody that's hypertensive or pre-hypertensive, put them on a nitric oxide booster, and dramatically improve their blood pressure. Beet Elite does that. We've actually shown with pre-hypertensive individuals that giving them a pack of Beet Elite a day for 30 days normalizes their blood pressure. And so, I mean, we can just go on and on and on. So individuals that are, you know, getting into middle age and older age really need to consider taking nitric oxide boosters. And so they can take something like Beet Elite, or Neogenes actually generates and produces another product called Neo 40, which is more therapeutic and used by medical profession for hypertensive and other diseases, and so they could take that. But individuals that are older should consider taking some type of nitric oxide booster.
Okay, so you got me thinking. Now, how old are you?
I'm 69.
Oh, you know, you win, because I usually when I have this conversation, I'm older than everybody. You know.
Okay, so how old are you?
I'm going to be 63 this year.
Oh, okay, all right.
So I'm older than you thought.
Yeah, that's true. You are. Yeah. Well, we've seen a lot of changes in the exercise field in our years, I'll tell you that.
Yes, we have. And
sometimes it's funny how things cycle back. You know, stuff that was being done in the early 70s are now being rediscovered and stuff like that.
Oh, I know. It's all cyclical.
Yeah, really.
It really is. It's all cyclical. And as you suggested, I believe I've seen just about everything. And every time somebody comes up with something that they regurgitate from the past, and I'm like, oh, God, are we going to do that again? I mean, come on.
Yeah, right.
Did we not learn anything the last time?
Right.
You know? Well, Doc, I know that you've got to get off to a meeting, and I promised I'd get you off early enough so that you could do that. But I really enjoyed the conversation. It was very enlightening. I am going to try to find a way to get more of this product in my system. Because, as I suggested, I'm getting older, and I need every ounce of the benefit I can get.
Right. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to, I want to keep in touch with you. I'm looking forward to seeing some of the research you guys come up with. I wanted to do this show because I know a lot of people that are using this product, and I know a lot of people that are wondering why. And I think it's I think it was good to do. And knowing that there's no ties between us, I'm not doing this with you because I'm getting paid to do it. I'm doing it because I was fascinated by it, and I have a thirst for information and respect to exercise physiology and the benefits associated with proper nutrients. So I did this out of love.
Well, Richard, it's a pleasure doing it, and I'll be happy to do it any time again that you would like. So
I will, because I know I'm going to get some heat from the people that are into this fat adapted thing. We might have to battle them together.
All right, sounds good.
Listen, enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you so much for coming on the show with me, Doc.
Thanks a lot, Richard.
You bet.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Take care.
Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.